We begin the current Daf Masechtas Gittin Daf Mem Ches. We begin on the bottom line of Daf Mem Zayin Mem Beis, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous Daf. That is, the Gemara had introduced a related discussion from our previous Mishnah, which the Mishnah said one of the Tikkun Olams was that if someone sells his field in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, it's incumbent upon him to go every year and purchase whatever the price is from the non-Jewish owner, the first ripening fruits, which are the Bikurim, to bring them up to Yerushalayim. Now, related to that discussion of Bikurim, the Gemara brought a machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish regarding a case where somebody sells his field to someone else just for the produce. In other words, this is after the period of Yevil, where a person could sell his field permanently, but he doesn't. He sells it for a period of 10 years, which, in other words, he's not really selling the field because I still own it, although it's yours for 10 years, but it means to say I'm selling you the produce of the field. So there's machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish by the purchaser who for the next 10 years it's his field and he brings up the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, could he also recite the parasha of a Hadama Asher Nasatali to thank Hashem for the field that he has given him, not just the produce, or not? Rabbi Yochanan holds that he could say he's maybe Vikaira because he holds Kinya Peres is Kikinya Guf. Owning the fruits is essentially like owning the body, meaning that there's no utility in owning land. The utility is the utility of utilizing it. And since you have the Kenyan Paris, so it's like you own the land, so you can thank Hashem for the land. Whereas Rish Lakish holds that no, you only have the fruits, not the land. You can't thank Hashem for the land that he gave you when he didn't give you land. You're only having the ownership of the fruits, not on the land. So you bring the Bikurim, but you don't recite the parasha. That's where our Gemara continues and says, V'adul tamayim, that Rabbi and Rish Lakish are going according to their reasonings mentioned elsewhere, which essentially they argue on the same principle, didn't like we learned. Hamaycher today, if someone sells his field, as we continue on top of Mem Chesam and Aleph, Bizman Shayevel Noyeg, at a time when the period of Yevel applies, when the Beis Hamikdash was still standing and the whole Jewish people were there, where actually, and then every time you sell your land in the times when there's Yevel, essentially it's a sale of the land just for the produce. The reason being is because once the Yevel, the Jubilee, the 50th year comes around, it actually goes back to the seller. You cannot sell permanently when there's a period of Yevel. So essentially, it's really the same type of a case, and the Gemara is going to discuss why we need both machlekes as the previous one. There was Toma after the period of Yevil where you could sell it permanently, but you're selling it just for the produce. They have the same machlekes regarding when there is Yevil, which is essentially selling land just for the produce. Where Yechon and Amar maybe Vekaira, the one who purchased the land for whatever however many years is left to Yevil, he could bring Bikurim and he could recite the parsha of Asher Damash Nesatali. Whereas Rish Lakish says, no, he could bring it, but he doesn't recite. Now, the Gemara explains, what's the reasoning of their opinions? As we said before, Rabbi Yechon maybe the Kari you bring in, you could recite, because Kinyan Peres Kikinya Gaguf Dami. Only the produce, which is what you do until the Yevil year, is like owning the land. Rish Lakish maybe in the Kari, no, you could bring it, but you don't recite, because Kinyan Peres Lav Kikinya Gaguf Dami. Only the produce is not like you own the land itself. And therefore, you can't say the whole Parashat Bikurim, which in there it says, Hadom Ashna Satali. Now, the Gemara says, it was necessary to say both Machlekes and Rebbe Yochanan and Rosh Lakish, both regarding this case over here in a regular sale of when there's Yevil, and a sale for Peiris when there's no more Yevil, which essentially they're both the same thing. Now, why was it necessary? Because Di'i Itmar Behahi, because, and there is actually Machlekes how to interpret which one is the one. But one interpretation is that had we said their machlik is only regarding the case from the previous stuff, when the sale was stipulated by the seller that it's only for the produce, meaning for the next 10 years of produce, so I would have said by he come Rish Lakish. In such a case, does Rish Lakish say that you could bring it but you don't recite? Because the chikonachas, because when the purchaser settles into the buying of this field, adai to the bear konachas. His whole intention was only for the produce, not to purchase the land itself, not even for one moment, because he knows he's not getting the land. It was stipulated it's only for 10 years. When you buy something, it's not a temporary buying. What you're buying is the produce. That's permanently going to be yours. So since there's not even an iota of thinking that you own the land, so there is where Rish Lakish says that it's only Kinyan Peres, and it's like not like Kikinya Guf. Bahach, but regarding the case that we brought now regarding when it's sold during a Yevil year, where they're essentially, you're really selling it totally. It's just Xeris Akasa that the Torah says when the Yevil year comes, then you have to give it back to the seller. But you're settling it to really buy the land. So I would think maybe in such a situation, actually, then Rish Lakish agrees to Rabbi Yechanan that the Kenyan that's really only in Paris, because retroactively the Gzeisa Kasa says you really didn't own the land, but you would think in such a situation it would be like a kinagov. That's why we have to say there machlekes also in by the Yevil case that even there he holds that it's lavka kinagov, and so to the other way. The Yitman Baha, and have we only said the case with the Yevil, Baha come Rabbi Yechanan, maybe over there Rabbi Yechanan says it's kikinyaguf. Because there, essentially, really, you are buying the land. You just, when Yevil comes, you have to give it back. But regarding the case when it was stipulated, I'm not selling you the land, right? Because he said it's only for 10 years. So that's there, maybe Rabbi Yechanan would agree to Rish Lakish that it would not be kikinyaguf. Tzricha, that's why you have to have both their machlekes in, both in regards to after Yevil. But he stipulated it's only for the payers for the next 10 years. And during Yevil, when it's a regular sale, but at Yevil it goes back to the seller. So Gemara continues trying to bring a raya, as it did on the previous daf, regarding whose opinion is the correct one of do you say kinya peres ki kinya gof or not. So Tashma, the Gemara says, let's bring a raya from the following mission in Bikurim, seemingly like Rabbi Yechanan. The Mishnah says, Hakoina ilon v'karkoi. If someone purchases a tree, and the land that holds up the tree from someone else, but he doesn't own the land, he just owns the land of the tree. So maybe Vikara, he could bring the Bikurim from that tree, and he recites the Parsha of Hardamash and the Satali. So seemingly, as the Gemara's assumption is, that the Mishnah Bikurim is talking about even at a time during Yevil. So even though it's going to go back at Yevil, so essentially it's only Kinyan Peres, still we see it's Kinyan Guf, and that's why he could say Hardamash and the Satali, which is difficult according to Rish Lakish. And that the Gemara answers, Nohach Mayaskin the Bezman She'ena Yevil Noig. Rish Lakish would tell you that the Mishnah Bikurim is talking about at a time when there's no Yevil. So therefore, it's a full-fledged sale. It's not going to go back at the Yevil year. So it's not just a Kinya Peris, it's a Kinya Guf. And that's why you could be made Bekaira. So the Gemara says, continues to try to bring a Raya from that same Mishnah in Bikurim. Toshima, coming here from that Mishnah, it says, Hakoine Shnei Ilanis. The first case was told about that he buys one tree. Here's someone where he purchases two trees, betoich sedeu shel chaveri, in his friend's field. Which the Gemara Bavasa Pe'alpha Medalf tells us that if you're purchasing only two trees, you have not acquired the land that's there with the trees. Now, therefore, maybe ve'ein akar, so the person will bring the bikurim of those two trees, but he cannot say the fruits of the land that you have given me, again, because he doesn't own any land. But the Gemara makes an inference, Hashleisha, but if, let's say, he had purchased three trees from his friend, which that we know that then you do acquire the land underneath and between those three trees, then it sounds like from the Mishnah that maybe the Kaire that you would bring and you would even recite Hadamash Nasatali, even though that Kenyan that you have over there, it's going to go back at Yevil. So you see that although Kinya Peres is what we're talking about, we still see it's Kikinya Guf, and that's what you could say, Adamash Nesatali. I think my answer says it did regarding the previous question to resolve Rish Lakish, Hachiname Bezman She'eno Yevil Noig. No, here we're talking about when there's no Yevil. So if there's no Yevil, yes, you own the land that's beneath the tree. It's Adamash Nesatali because it's not a temporary ownership. It's not going back at Yevil because it's not talking about during Yevil. So it's not just a Kinya Peres, it's actually a Kinya Guf. That's one approach how to answer those two halachas from the Mishnah in Bikurim, where that it's talking about bezman she'ena yevil noig. Another approach the Gemara has to resolve Rish Lakish is that v'hashda the Amr Rav Chisda, now that Rav Chisda had explained and he qualified and he said that the machlekes, actually the whole machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish regarding when there's a regular sale during Yevil, if you say that it's the kinyan haperis is kinyan guf or not. Rav Chisda explained that was only b'yoyvel sheni. That was only when it was already by the second cycle, after the first 50 years that the Jewish people were in Eretz Yisrael, and that they counted another, they were in their second cycle, where they were already used to this idea about, hey, it's really true, meaning the lands that I sold really come back to me after 50 years. That's where Rav Chisda says, Rish Lakish said, that, okay, then you're going to be maybe v'ein ukeire. Because then the seller already is confident and he's comfortable. He knows that, yeah, it's true. He's really going to get his land back, and he's confident in that. Ava b'yevil rishon, but says Rav Chisda, when it was the first yevil that the Jewish people ever experienced, actually, diri hakoil, there everyone would agree, even Rish Lakish, that maybe v'kayre, that those who purchased the fields in those times, regarding the first yevil cycle, they actually brought the bikurim and they recited Hadamash Nesatali. Why? Takati le'samach netayu. Because the sellers weren't yet relying, they weren't confident to think that their field's really going to come back. And when they sold it totally, everything, the whole deal, they didn't expect it getting back. So the purchaser really, he owned not just the Paris, the land too. Now when Yovel came around, it went back to the seller, but the sale was final. So that's, in regard to such a case, he could even say, Adomash Nesatali. So on that says the Gemara, based on Rav Chizkiya's interpretation, we could say Loi Kasha. We have another approach to answer from those two halachas in the Mishnah Bikurim, why it's not difficult on Rish Lakish. Because those two halachas from the Mishnah Bikurim are talking about Yovel Rishon, the first cycle of Yovel that the Jewish people ever experienced. Yes, there, if let's say you bought three trees where then you have the land beneath it, then the Lekech would be Mevi V'Kair, because again, that, as Rav Chizkiya said, Rish Lakish would agree that there the sale was final. Ha, but Rish Lakish, who he's saying that you, when it's a sale, when Yevil applies, that your Ein HaKayr is Tuma B'Yevil Sheini. From the second Yevil cycle and on, we're there, it's essentially like whenever anyone would sell anything, if it was a few years before Yevil, it's as if he's saying, hey buddy, I'm selling it to you only for a few more years till Yevil. He just doesn't have to say it, and therefore, since it's that type of a halacha, it's like Kinya Peres, that would be Lavka Kinya Guf. But again, those two Mishnayos are talking about where it was in the first Yevil, where there it was a real Kinyan Guf, and that's why the person can be maybe Vikar. So the Gemara says, Lemi Ketanoi, so that those two Mishnayos were not difficult on Rish Lakish for two different interpretations. But now the Gemara says, let's say that the Machlekes regarding Kinyan HaPeris, if you have an acquisition, it's something in its utility, in its produce. If that's Kinyan Guf or not, then it's a Machlekes Tanoim. And this would be as is brought in the following Braisa. Now, what's important to understand is the differences between a stei achuza and a stei mikna, which there's the ancestral land that a person has, which is what he inherited from his father, going back all the way back to Yehoshua ben Nun, who he divided the land amongst the Jewish people. And then there's what's called a stei mikna, which is you could purchase a land from someone else. And then regarding the difference between, and that obviously goes back at Yevil to the one who sold it to you, now, regarding, there's a difference in halacha between the stei achuza that you're makdish and between the stei mikna that you're makdish. By the ancestral land, which you inherited from your father and father going all the way back, if a person is makdish, he says that this goes to hekdish, to Hashem, of any of his stei achuza fields. If he doesn't redeem it before the Yevil year, and the gizber, the one who's in charge of all the hekdish things, he sold it to someone else, The original owner cannot redeem it anymore if he had already sold it off to someone else. And actually, when the Yevil year comes around, it gets removed from the one who purchased it from the Gabbai of Hekdesh, and it gets divided amongst the Kahanim, and that's where it remains. It doesn't go back to the one whose ancestral field it was. Like it says in the Pasuk in Vayikra, Chav Zayin, says, Vim lo yigal es asad, if he doesn't redeem it, then v'hoya asad v'tzeis v'gomer, then the field will be, as it goes out, it goes to the Kahanim. That's halacha by stei achuza. By stei mikna, if someone had purchased a field from someone else whose stei achuza was, and then he's makdish it and he doesn't redeem it, and the gizber sells it to someone else, then actually when the yevil year comes around, it goes back to the original owner who had sold it to the one who was makdish it. Like it says in the pasuk, it says bishnas ha-yevil yashav asad, that the yevil year goes back lashekanei meiter from the one that he had bought it from. So that he was makdish it and hekdish sold it off to someone else, when the hekdish year comes, when the yevil year comes around, it goes back to the original owner. So that's a fundamental difference between someone who's being makdish a stei achuza and it does not redeem it, where then it goes to the kahanim, and someone that's makdish a stei mikna, which he had purchased from someone else and he didn't redeem it, then when the yevil year comes, it goes back to the original owners. Now that's the introduction for the following braisa. The braisa says, minayin lilekech sodemi aviv vekdisha. How do we know regarding a case where a son purchased from his father one of his father's fields, and then he's makdashit when his father is still alive? So essentially, when the son was makdashit, he wasn't being makdash a stei achuza. He didn't yet inherit it from his father. It's not his ancestral field yet. It's his father's stei achuza. He bought it from his father. So for the son, it's like a stei mikna. So says the Braisa, how do you know in such a case that if the son was makdash when it was essentially a stei mikna for him, v'achekach meis aviv, and then after he had been makdash it, the father died, which now upon the father's death it becomes his stei achuza, it becomes his ancestral field. Says the Braisa, minayin shetei lefonav kedei achuza, how do we know that it should be considered by him kisteachuza like an ancestral field? In other words, if he doesn't go now and redeem it, and the gizber sells it, when it comes to the evil year, it's going to go to the kehanim. It's not going to go back to the original owner, which was his father, and then him to inherit it from his father. No, because at this point in time, it became a steachuza. So now it's a steachuza. If he doesn't redeem it, it's like any steachuza, where if he sells it off, and then Yevil Yer comes around, it goes to the Kehanim. How do you know that that would apply in such a case? Tamalema, that's what the Pasuk teaches in Mayikra. It says that im estei meknosai, it actually says v'im estei meknosai, that if regarding a person's purchase field, asher loy misteachuzase, which is not from his ancestral field, as the Pasuk concludes over the Yakdash Lashem, that the person is going to be Makdash this to Hashem. So then the halach is, like we said, regarding a stay mikna, where again, then at the Yevil year, it goes back to the original owner. Now, however, the words Ashaloi Misteachu Zasai are seemingly superfluous. Yeah, of course, if it's a stay mikna, if you purchase it, it's not your ancestral field. So on that, the Tanna Kama of the Braisa says, Sada She'ina Ru'uya, that what it's coming to tell you is that if at the time that you makdish that field, it has to be that it's a field that's not even fit liyas de'achuza to ever be an ancestral field. That's what's coming to tell you. Meaning, if this that you're being makdish, if you want to qualify it as a stay mikna, that it goes back to the original owner at Yevil, that's only if it's ashaloy misde'achuza, that it can't even be. Of course, it's a stay mikna, it's not a chuza. But it means to say it's not even ro'u, it's not even fit to be a ste'achuza. Oh, that's what the pasuk is coming to forewarn. Yatzis azu, that excludes the case that we're discussing over here, shebru'uya liyos de'achuza, where it is fit to be an ancestral field, because he's the son. And when the father dies, it becomes a ste'achuza. So that's what the pasuk is coming to tell you, that actually such a case, we will qualify it as a ste'achuza. Now, and definitely, if the father dies first, and then he's makdashed, that at the time when he was makdashed, it already was essentially achuza, that for sure it's going to be yitzle kahanim, like a ste achuza. But again, even if he was first makdashed, and then the father died, so at the time that he was makdashed, it was a road to be a ste achuza, as it actually ended up happening when the father ended up dying a short while later, it's considered a ste achuza, and if he doesn't redeem it, it goes to the kahanim. That's the Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Shimon. Now, Rebbe Yoimer, he disagrees. He says, the case that you described is not considered like a ste'achuza. And actually, when the Yevil year comes around, after it was sold off to someone else, it actually goes back to him because of his father who sold it to him. So it's considered a ste'mikna. And when he was makdashit, it's like a ste'mikna. So Yevil comes around and goes back to his father. Now his father's dead, so it goes to him. He inherits it from his father. Rather, Meir says, what is the pasuk coming to teach? Because we said it is superfluous, this ashaloi miste'achuza. He said it comes to teach a case of when the father first dies and then the son was makdashit. And that's how Rameyer describes it. He says as follows. Says, minayin lelekech stei mi'aviv, from where do you know that if someone purchases a land from his father, and then umeis aviv, then his father dies, and then the achakach ekdesh, and only after the father died, when essentially it's already like a steachuz already, and then he was makdashit, how do you know that it should be considered like a steachuza? Meaning, if he doesn't redeem it and someone else buys it, and then Yevil comes around, that it goes to the kehanim and not to him, although he had purchased it from his father. That's what the pasuk teaches. That if the salacha applies only if it's a field that he purchased, that's not his ancestral field. What does that mean? It means sada she'ina steachuza. It means to say it cannot be a field that's also an ancestral field. Yatzis azu, that excludes this case, shehi steachuza, where besides it being when he's makdashit, a stay mikna, which it was, he really bought it from his father, but at the same time, by the time he's makdashit, it's already also a steachuza, he already inherited from his father, because his father died. That's the case that Rameir says that the pasuk is coming to teach you that it's in such a case that it's going to be considered a steachuza. But regarding the case that your Meir and Behuda described, that he says, no, that wouldn't be considered a steachuza, that would be still qualified as a stay mikta. So now, the Gemara explains, where do we see the machlikas Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish over here? As the Gemara describes, it says, ve'ilul Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. Now, whereas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, meis avev v'achakach ekdesha, regarding the case that Meir was interpreting the pasuk as coming to explain, where when the father dies and only then does the son who had bought it, but now already inherited, only then is he makdish. seemingly, according to them, you don't need the pasuk to teach you that halacha, because if you needed the pasuk to teach you that halacha, like Reb Meir says, then you wouldn't know the added chiddush case of when he's first makdish it, where at that time that he's makdish it, it's only a stay mikneh because the father didn't die yet, and then the father dies, how would you know that halacha? So obviously they say that no, the pasuk has to teach you that bigger chiddush case, when he's makdish and then the father dies. Because the case of when the father dies and then he's makdish it, that you don't need a pasuk for. Why not? And that's what the Gemara says, my lav baha kemifliki. Isn't this what they're arguing about? Meaning the machlikas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. The Reb Meir savar, because Reb Meir holds kinyan peiris, an acquisition of the peiris. In other words, when the son had bought the field from the father, where when he bought it from him, that was a kinyan peiris that he had. Now, at the time that his father died, what did the son have in the field? He had already had only a kinyan peiris because it was during the times of Yevil that we're discussing. So he had a kinyan peiris, but he holds, like Rabbi Yechanan, kikinya gufdami, essentially, when the son had bought it from the father, although again, it only had a kinyan peiris because he bought it, when it comes to Yevil, it's going to go back to his father, but he already had, as if he already owned the whole field, kikinya guf. Now, ubaha, now regarding such a case, pemises aviv, so when his father dies, who do la yars v'le midi, essentially, he's not really inheriting anything from his father, because what are you getting? You already had even the kinya guf, meaning although you didn't own the land itself, but your kinya peris, which you purchased from him, was like kinya guf. Now, therefore, we can't really now qualify this field as a steachuza, meaning to change its definition from stay mikra to steachuza, because they didn't change anything. It's as it was, which I have what it was. Nothing changed. It's a stay mikna. Now, the hilkach, therefore, that's why, according to a mayor, what we were calling a batilna, the lower level chiddush case, you would need a pasuk to tell you when the father first dies and that he's makdishit, that then it's going to be considered as a steachuza. Why? Because if not for a specific ribui, inclusionary term from the superfluous words in the pasuk of Ashalayim steachuza to come include that case, I would not have said that that should be considered like a steachuza, because, as we said before, what do you mean? There's no change of definition from stay mikta to stay achuza. Because this, I owned even the land through the kinya peiris up until now, and now that he died, it's also the same thing. That's why Meir holds that you need the pasuk to tell you that when the father dies, and then later he's makdishit, that we do consider it like achuza. That there is a transfer in its status from a stay mikta to stay achuza, and that then it will go to the kahanim if the son is not makdishit, is not paid it before yaivol. Because again, since he holds kinya peiris kinya guf dami, you would have thought that there was no change, and there's no change. You can't consider it as a steachuza. That's what you needed the pasuk to say that it is. Now, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon, Savi, they hold no, like Rish Lakish, kinya peiris lav kinya guf dami. Just what the son had owned in the field when he had bought it from his father, it's not like he owned the land itself. Ah, so baha. So regarding such a case, b'misis aviv, when the father dies, so hashtuhu dekayaris. So it's only now that he's inheriting the land itself, which he didn't own up until now. So the hilkach, so therefore, regarding such a case of when meis avu, when the father dies first, v'achakach hikdesh, and only after the father died he's makdashin, light tzrich akra, the hell, you don't need a pasuk to tell you that it's going to be considered like a steachuza, because of course it's like a steachuza. Because of course the status changed when the father died, it became suddenly his ancestral land. So of course, if he's being makdashit now, although yes, he had bought it before, but of course there's a transfer now to steachuza. If you're going to be makdashit, you're being makdashit steachuza. So of course it's going to go out to the kahanim. I don't need a pasuk to teach you that. Rather, the chiyitzach kra, that's where according to them, what is the pasuk in the superfluosity of ashaloyim steachuza coming to teach? That's the other case. Lakdisham, to tell you the seemingly bigger chiddush, that even if the son had bought it from the father, and when the father was still alive, he was makdashit, and only va'achakach meis aviv, and only later did the father die, who de itzrach? That's where you needed the pasuk to tell you a chiddush, that, which it seemingly is a big chiddush, because when he was makdish, it was only a stay mikna, but as they had interpreted, must mean what the pasuk is coming to tell you is that, yeah, it's only stay mikna if it's not even ro'u to be a stay achuza, where here it is ro'u, because when his father dies, it will be his ancestral field. That's what the pasuk is coming to tell you, that we'll still consider it like a stay achuza, and if you don't redeem it, it's going to go to the kahanim and not back to the original owners, which was the father, for the son to inherit. But so therefore, the Gemara just points out, seemingly, that the machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Shlakish is a machlekes tanoim between Reb Meir and on the one hand, Rabbi Yehuda and Reb Shimon on the other hand. So that the Gemara says no. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak says lo ilam emloch. Really, I could tell you that ba'alma that in general, kasavri Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon that even Rabbi Yehuda and Reb Shimon agree that kinyan peiris is kikinya guftami. That even they would agree to Rabbi Yehuda that no one disagrees that an acquisition in the produce is like only the land itself. And really, therefore, they agree that, as we explained for Reb Meir, who we were assuming he holds kinyan peiris kikinya guftami, is that regarding the case when the father dies and only afterwards he is makdish, that you did need a pasuk. Because as we said, since you already like own the land because of kinyan peiris, so then really nothing's changing when the father dies to transfer it to stay achuza. Now, so then what's the machlekes? V'hachar b'hud Reb Shimon is because kra ashkechu v'darsh. They found a different pasuk and expounded from that pasuk to include from there even the case of when you're makdish and then the father dies afterwards. Because if they didn't, again, because if they didn't have another pasuk, you would only be able to learn like Reb Meir that the one teaching you have is the lesser chiddush one, which is when the father dies and then you makdish it. Now, so what's this extra source that they have? Is because as follows. They say, Lichtav Rachmana, the Torah should have said, Im esdei miknasa, if this person is being makdish, his acquired field, asher loy achuzasai, meaning even if we're coming to teach you one halacha, because it's superfluous. But it, even in the excess, it should have said, asher loy achuzasai, which is not his inheritance. It shouldn't have said, asher loy misdei achuzasai, because it already said we're talking about a field. It already says, im esdei miknasai. If it's acquired field, asher loy achuzasai, which is not his inherited field, my misdei achuzasai. Why does it add on the word today, the field? We already know we're talking about a field. Oh, that's why it's coming to teach you a second chiddush. First is the superfluous asher loy achuzasai, which, yeah, that teaches you the case of, like Reb Meir said, that if first the father dies and then he's makdashit. But the added chiddush of stay teaches you that even a sadeh she'ena ru'uya li yistei achuza. It's coming to tell you that it has to be a field that's not even fit to be a yistei achuza. Yatzazazu, that excludes this case, which is the added chiddush of that Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon are saying that it's she'ru'uya li yistei achuza, which is fit to be a yistei achuza. So even if he's makdash it, and only then does the father die, still we're going to say over there that we're going to qualify that as a stei achuz. It's not going to be like a stei mikna, which is when the Yevil year comes around that it goes back to the original owner. And therefore, there's no raya that they're arguing in the machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Shlakish. We could say that their machlekes depends on something else regarding if you darshan the extra word stei to tell you that extra chiddush of being makdish v'achikach mesav. Now the Gemara continues on this machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Shlakish, and Amr Rabbi Yosef, he says, Ilav de Amr Rabbi Yochanan. Were it not for the fact that in this machlokes that we just brought, that Rabbi Yechanan says, kinya peis ki kinya guftami, that he holds that the acquisition of the produce is like only the field itself, le'motze yod v'raglav beveis ha-medesh. Then Rabbi Yechanan literally means to say he wouldn't find his hands and feet in the beis medesh, meaning he would have contradicted, he would have put himself in a very difficult position, and it's good that he holds kinya peis is ki kinya guftami. Because he says, because we have a different halacha from Rabbi Yechanan. The Amr of Asi, Amr Rabbi Yechanan, he says, Ha'achin shachalku l'kuchesin. Rabbi Yechanan holds that when brothers split up an inheritance, essentially we consider them as consumers, as purchasers. Now the reason for this is because he holds what's called ein brera. There's no retroactive clarification about when the father died, if he has 10 sons, which one of the 10 sons gets which tenth of the field. We don't know really whose is whose. Really, maybe your tenth is that and his tenth is that. So essentially what they're doing is, yeah, we're swapping. Maybe it's yours, maybe it's mine. But we're all buying from each other a tenth of it, and that's the agreement. Now, because he considers them as lekuches, as purchases, he holds the halacha is, umarzirin zelezeh b'yevel. When it comes to the yevel year, all the brothers from the whole family have to put it back into the pot because of the mitzvah of yevel, because since he considers Yerusha like a lekucha, so then it's like they all bought it from each other. When you buy a field, when the Yevil still applies, you have to give it back to the one that sold it to you. Now, since we don't know, everyone has to give it back on Yevil, and then we split it again. Now, so since he says that a Yerusha that's divided makes the Yerushim like Lekuches, so says Rav Yosef, now ve'isol k'daitech, now if you would entertain, mean, in other words, if Rav Yechim would hold that a Kinyan Peiris, which is that whenever you buy a field, when the Yevil, the halachas of Yevil apply, is lav kikinya guftami, if Rabbi Yochanan in that machlekes would hold it like Rish Lakish, that the acquiring of the peiros is not like you own the land itself, then loy mishkachas the maisi bikurim. Then you would never find anybody that would bring bikurim. In other words, to bring bikurim and to recite the parsha of bikurim. Ella, the only way you would find someone is if someone that inherited a land that wasn't subdivided from the times when it was split in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, which would be chad bar chad. It would be an only child, the son of an only child. We're going back to his father and grandfather and father all the way, all the generations back at Yeshua ben Nun until Yeshua ben Nun. Because any time one father would have two sons, that would be splitting a Yerusha. Now, Rabbi Yechon holds that Yerushim are like Lekuches. Now, if you held that Lekuches, which, as we said, when Yevil applies, are only getting Kinyan Peres, and if you hold Kinyan Peres is not like Kinyan Guf, then you can't say Hadam Asher Nesateli. So it would come out that nobody, basically, in the Jewish people, besides those that were Ben Acher Ben, going back with one child to Yeshua Ben Nun, are the only ones that would be able to say the Kriya of Bikurim. And therefore, as Rav Yisrael says, he wouldn't be able to come at the Beis Medrash. What are you telling me? Tell me that only those that could say the Kriya of Bikurim are those, and who knows if there even was such a case of that there's only one sin after one sin to say the Kriya of Bikurim. And therefore, says Rav Yisrael, it's good that at least he holds that in regards to this other machlekes, that Kinyan Peres is Kikinyan Guf. So although he considers any Yerush, basically, that has more than one child as Lekeach, where, again, because it's going back in Yevil, that means to say you really only have a Kinyan Peres up until Yevil, it's okay, you could still recite the Kriya Bikurim, because Rav Yechanan, on the other hand, holds Kinyan Peres is Kikinyan Guf, and that's why you could say Hadama Asher Nesateli. Now, however, Amar Rava says, Kra umasnita misayele l'Rish Lakish. Both the psuk, the pasuk, and tanoik sources support the opinion of Rish Lakish that Kinyan Peres is lav kikinyan guftam. It's not like you own the land itself. What are these two supports? So kra, the pasuk is a mayikra, as we continue on Talmud Beis, where the pasuk says the mispar shnei tevuos yimkar lach. That is, according to the counting of the years of produce, is what he sells you. In other words, the pasuk is describing the halach of yovel, where it says that according to the amount of years that is left after Yevil, that's really how much you're buying it for, because you're really not buying it forever. When the year of Yevil comes, it's going to go back to the seller. Now, one thing, so he says, you see from the pasuk, like Rish Lakish, is that the guy's not really buying the land itself, only the tevua of every single year is he buying, as the pasuk describes it. So you see from the pasuk itself that really you're only purchasing the produce and not the land. So you see that it's because Kinyan Peres is lav kikinyan guf dami. And so to Masnita, we have support from Tanoic sources. The Tanoic, learn the Braisa. The Braisa says, B'chor noitel pishnayim, the firstborn, he takes a double portion. And that is, when they're splitting the inheritance, he takes, as if there was, if there's 10 sons, as if there was 11 sons, and he takes two portions. That's what the firstborn takes. Says the Braisa, he takes a double portion, even in a field, a basada hachizeris la'aviv b'yevel. Even regarding a field that's coming back to his father in the Yevil year. In other words, the father's already dead, but the father had sold the field, and when it's going to come Yevil, although he's died within the Yevil cycle, when Yevil comes, it's going to come back to the brothers, because as Rashi explains, if it already had returned to the father, then it's obvious. Rather, the chiddush that the Brais is teaching is that the land itself was never acquired by the purchaser. And therefore, essentially, is considered in the chazaka, in the domain of the father, even before he died. And the reason being is because if you held like Rabbi Yechanan that the kinyan peres that the lekeach has is kikinya guftami, then essentially we would only consider that field what's called ro'u, meaning something that's fit at a later point in time to come to the estate after the father died, but it's not really his now. Now the halacha is that the firstborn does not take. He doesn't take what's fit to be in the father's estate. Let's say it's going to be payable 10 years from now. Someone's going to have to give him something. Although it's going to come, we don't consider like the father's right now. Because as the pasuk says in Devarim Chaf Aleph, whatever is found by him right now, what it's muchzik in his estate right now, that's where the firstborn takes a double portion. Not what's going to come. So he says, you see from this braisa, also like Rish Lakish, where the field is coming in Yevil, obviously we consider it that the father owns the field right now before Yevil come. It's just the produce that not. That's why the firstborn takes a portion. Because if you say like Rabbi Yechanan that the Lekeach owns the land too because of Kinya Peres and Kinya Guf, then it would only be considered like someone that's Ro, and the firstborn would not take a double portion. So those are two supports like Rish Lakish. Now another support like Rish Lakish, Amar Abaya, well, it's following along Rish Lakish's opinion. Abaya says, Naktina, we have a tradition that Baal ben Nichse Ishtai, when a husband regarding his wife's properties, Tzarech Harsha, he needs permission from his wife if he wants to contend with any litigant that's contesting his wife's land. The reason being is, of course, if he doesn't have this what's called harsha, this permissibility, then that other litigant could tell the husband what's called lav bal dvarm didiat. I'm not contesting with you. You mean I don't have to talk with you in court? You don't own the land. Now the reason is because Abaye is going with Rish Lakish's opinion that kinya peris lav ki kinya gufta. I mean, although the husband of course has what to do with his land because he gets to use the peris of the wife's property, it doesn't make a difference. But you don't own the land. I'm contending the land itself. So therefore, he needs permission again, like Rish Lakish. Now, however, says Abaye b'loy amaron ela d'loy nachis. But we didn't say this only if the person's not contending a peri. Mean to say he's not contending with the fruits at all. He doesn't have any claim, this husband, with that person because he's not contending with the fruits. Avol nachas aperi, but says Abaya, if he's contending not just regarding the land, but also regarding the produce of the land, then what's called migui, migui de mishtoi din aperi. Now, since the husband could now contend with him because of the fruits that he's contending with, so mishtoi din agufa, now he could also go ahead, even without harsha, and contend with this person, with this other one who's claiming that it's his, because again, once he's involved in the court case, so then he can be totally involved, even for things which are not his, because again, we hold like Rish Lakish, that Kinyan Peres is Lav Kegina Gufdami, and we don't consider the land as it's his. Hadnu Lach HaShelech, we shall return to you the fourth Perek of Masechet Kitten, Perek HaShelech, and with that we begin the fifth Perek of Masechet Kitten, Perek HaNizakin, which this first Mishnah continues the theme of the previous Mishnah, of the last Perek, talking about things that are tikkun olam, things that were instituted as a way, as a rectification, as an idealism for how the world should be. So the Mishnah tells us, HaNizakin, regarding those who were damaged, they were damaged parties from someone else, Shaman Lehen, so we evaluate the damage, and they collect the damage worth of what was damaged, Be'idus, with the highest quality fields of the one who had damage. In other words, it's what happens is if somebody who damaged someone else doesn't have money to pay up. So he wants to pay him with land. He says, look, I owe you $1,000 for damages. Here, I have this land that's worth $1,000. Now, the halacha here is that the one who gets damaged can choose the choicest type of a land. That's because it's preferable for a person to collect from a smaller piece of land, but high quality, and not to collect a larger quantity, but lower quality. Now, therefore, as the Mishnah will explain, that all these halachas we're mentioning in the Mishnah are because of tikkun olam, as the Gemara will explain the details of the tikkun olam, that because of tikkun olam, the one who's damaged can demand that, yeah, if you're going to pay me with land, but I want your highest quality land for that $1,000, not lower quality and more land. That's regarding a damaged party. Ubachayv, a creditor, if someone owes someone money regarding a loan, then bebein this. He could collect with the medium quality land. The ksubas isha, and regarding a woman who's collecting her ksuba, she could collect with beziburis, only with the lowest grade land. So there's three qualities. Idis bein beziburis, a damaged party collects from idis, a bachayv, a regular creditor, collects from beinis, and the woman collecting her ksuba collects with ziburis. Remeir, he argues on that last one, and he says, af ksubas isha bebeinis, no, even the woman collecting her ksuba, that contract that where she collects after that she's divorced, she could collect with beinis. That's one halacha. Another halacha the Mishnah says is einefrom in a chasim mishubadim. A person cannot collect from encumbered properties, but makim sheish nachasim bnei chayrin, when there's still available free lands by the debtor himself, tafilahin ziburis. Even if it's low quality fields, in other words, even though generally someone could collect, let's say a creditor collect from beinis, but although at the time that the loan happens, all the debtor's properties become indebted to him, which means if he defaults on the loan, he has no money, I could collect from any land that was sold after that to someone else. But, says the Mishnah, if there's at least any land still by the debtor, and even if it's low-grade land, but there's land there and he could collect his loan from it, he cannot collect, let's say, his bainness from a purchaser because there's still land left. And again, this is all because of tikkun olam, where although he usually collects Beinus, he cannot collect that from the Lekuchas, he would have to collect from the Bnei Charan. Another halacha, another tikkun olam, is Ein Ephraim Menichse Yisoyimim. A person is not allowed to collect from the estate of orphans, which let's say their father who died now owed them money. You could only collect Ele Ben Aziburs, only from the lowest grade land. You can't collect from what you would normally collect from something higher. Another tikkun olam is Ein Meitzin. We are not allowed to collect La'achilas Peiris. What's this case of the consumption of the produce? It's talking about a specific case where if somebody stole a field, then he sold it to someone else, he flipped it, he stole it, and then he sold it. Then the one who bought it from him, unwittingly, he planted, and then it sprouted, and it produced fruits. Now, the one who the field was stolen from comes and says, what's going on? What are you doing working in my field? He says, what do you mean? This guy sold it to me because this guy stole it to you. He didn't own it, he stole it from me. So he collects the field, and he takes it right back. With everything that's in there, it's because it's my field. Well, who asked you to? So fine, you planted. Good for you. Now, what happens is that the one who owned the land has to compensate the one who quote purchased the land unwittingly from a thief. He has to pay him only the what's called the yitzias, how much he invested in, because that he actually made a gain for the one who originally owned the land, who still owns the land. So he has to pay him for that. But that's nothing compared to the money that he spent for the land. He's not compensating for the land. You didn't buy it from me. And neither does he compensate him for the payers that he actually produced, just for the effort that he put in and for the basic expenses. So what the lekeach does, the purchaser goes back to the seller. You're a thief. You sold me stolen land. So he collects the value of the land itself that he collects from the chasim shabadim. Now, because he had sold it to him with responsibility, with achrai, saying, I take responsibility for that sale. Now, they had written a document of sale, which, although he thought it was a sale, essentially really turned out it was really a loan, because he was giving him money, but he wasn't really getting anything in return because it wasn't really his land. But since the, quote, loan was with a document, so any milva b'shtar, you could collect from the chasim shabadim. So that you could collect from the value of the land, from that thief's lands which were later sold, you could collect from the chasim shabadim. But what we're calling the payrois, which is the case we're discussing over here, la'achilas payrois, which are the produce which he worked so hard, and he produced this whole crop, which now is being taken back by the original owner, that he could only collect from the chasim b'nei chayrin, from what's available by the thief, and he could not collect from mishubadim, from what he had sold off after that false sale. And the Gemara will, on Daf Nun Mabez, will explain the reason why that he cannot collect from the chasim mishubadim. So that's one case which the Mishnah is discussing of eimetzin l'achilas peiros, he cannot collect for the consumption of this unwitting purchaser from original owner produce, and also ulishvach karkois, which is a similar type of halacha, which is if let's say that this purchaser who unwittingly bought a stolen field, he improved the quality of the land by planting trees or by having it fertilized and so on, so there's an increase in value in the land. So also regarding that area, and ulamazne isha v'abonis, when the man of the family dies, so his wife and his daughters are fed from his estate. So also regarding that collection of money, all these areas are not collected min chasim mishabadim. Where although from the time that he got married to the wife, his properties became indebted to her for her eating after he dies, still you cannot collect those things from encumbered properties, meaning that fields that were sold off even after that liability was incurred. And the reason is when they tikkun olam, as the Gemara will explain, because of tikkun olam, we can't let all these types of people be collecting from purchases from that person who had sold the land. Now the last case the Mishnah talks about is v'hamitzi mitziya. If someone finds a found object and he returns it to the owner, and the owner says, wait a second, you didn't return the whole thing. You returned my wallet, but what's with all the money that was inside? Says the Mishnah, lo yishava. The one who's returning the lost object does not have to take an oath, which you usually have to. When they tikkun olam, because of tikkun olam, and as Rashi explains, that's going back on all the cases, they're all because of tikkun olam, where it's helping us, the more global picture, the macro, and therefore we don't require, in this last case, the one who's returning the lost object to make a shvur. Now the Gemara begins to clarify the Mishnah by asking on the first halacha mentioned that we said that the nizakin, that damaged party, Shamalan Be'idis, we give him the highest quality of the Mazik's fields. The Gemara asks, "Memnei tikkun olam?" That's because of just a rabbinic tikkun olam. That's a biblical law. So, like it says the pasuk in Shemayis, where this is in Perichov Beis Pasuk Dal, the pasuk says, "Veshilach es beirah." If someone sends out his animal, uvir b'steacher, and then it grazes and damages in someone else's field. So the pasuk says, "The siv metiv sadehu." Now the best of his field, umetiv kamei, the best of his vineyard, yeshalom, he has to pay. So we see that he has to give the highest quality. What do you tell me is tikkun olam when it's a pasuk? Amar Abayis. Abayis says, "No, lo yitzricha ela l'Rabbi Shmuel." The Tana of this Mishnah that says is tikkun olam is going according to the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. The Abba that he says that midah rice is actually biblically b'denizik shayminan. That is, we qualify, we assess it. What the highest quality is in the highest quality fields of the damaged party. In other words, as the Gemara will conclude, that if, let's say, the lowest quality fields of the damager is the same quality as the highest quality of the damaged party, then, actually, according to biblical law, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the damager only has to give, like, his own lowest grade, ziburis, because that's like the idis of the nizik. In other words, when the pasuk says metiv sadehu, metiv karmoi, his best, whose best, Rabbi Shmuel holds, it means the best of the nizik. So biblically, he only has to give the best of the nizik. Kamash malon, that's what the Mishnah comes to teach you, that rabbinically, mimnei tikkun olam, what's the tikkun olam? That people should be careful from having their animals or their objects by themselves cause damage. That's shaminon b'damazik. That's only rabbinically that Rabbi Shmuel would say, that okay, that he even has to give his own best. Where although the best of the nizik is like his lowest grade, he has to give his own best. Again, that's because of tikkun olam. But the raisa, that's only the nizik's best. Now the Gemara asked, and through that discussion we'll see that that's the interpretation. The Gemara says, "My Rabbi Shmuel, what's this opinion of Rabbi Shmuel that you're quoting, that you're saying that a Mishnah must be going like that?" So the Tanya, like, we learned the raisa, that it's a machlekes how to interpret this pasuk of meitiv sedehu umeitiv karma yishalom. The best of his fields, the best of his vineyard, he has to pay when after his animal damaged someone else's field. So the first interpretation says, that's Rabbi Shmuel, Meitiv sedehu shel nizik, the best of the field of the one who is damaged, his highest quality field, Umeitiv karmer shel nizik, and the highest quality vineyard that he has. Now, in the Gemara's assumption, the understanding is, as it sounds like, that if, let's say, a person sends his animal, and he ends up damaging someone else's field, meaning he eats one of the rows of a person's field in that other person's field, that we assess that row that he ate as if he ate the most expensive row in the damaged party's field, and he has to pay the value of the most expensive row, even though the row that the animal ate was a less expensive row. Which the Gemara later on is going to ask, what do you mean? What do you mean if there's a different quality grades in that field, and this animal ate the lowest quality, meaning something that's worth only $20 a pound, he has to pay him for the highest quality, which is worth $100 a pound? But that's what it sounds like to the Gemara, at least in the Havamina. Meaning he has to give the best, the most expensive row in that damaged party's field, he has to pay for whatever row his animal had eaten. That's a very small. But Kivaimer, he argues, he says no. Loi baha kasev, the pasuk's not coming to be stringent on the damager, that he has to pay more than what he damaged. Ella ligvis l'nizakin, rather what the pasuk is coming to do, it's coming to collect for the damaged party, meaning when we assess when the damager wants to pay with land, that we assess min ha'idis from the highest quality, meaning we're talking about quality, not in value. Meaning if, let's say, the damager, the mazik, has no money and he wants to pay with the worth of the damage in land, so then he has to give from his highest quality land. But of course, you only pay how much you damage. You don't pay more than what you damage. And v'kavochemer lehekdesh, and definitely it's a kavochemer for the halacha that when it applies to hekdesh, which the Gemara later will explain what does that mean. What does it mean? What does it have to do with hekdesh regarding this halacha that Rabbi Kiva is describing, that when he pays from his iddis. Now the Gemara asks, will Rabbi Shmuel, which we alluded to this question before, Achal shmeina mishal shmeina. I understand that if he eats a fatty row, meaning an expensive row, so you pay that rate. But achal kush mishal shmeina, if you eat a low, inexpensive row, you pay for the fatty, for the expensive row. How does that make sense? Why? How does he interpret the pasuk that he pays for the most expensive meitiv kamer shel nizik, meitiv sedeh shel nizik, What does that mean? Why would I pay? My damage was in his Buick. Why am I paying for his Rolls Royce? How does that make sense? So Amar Avid bar Oven, he says, it would make sense. Why? Because what are we talking about over here in the Pasuk? Is Kegayin she'achla aruga bein arugas. We're talking about with the animal ate a row amongst rows. Now, in that field, in that Beisah, there were low quality rows and there were high quality rows that are intermingled. Now, we don't know which one. We don't know if he ate from the lower quality one or from the higher quality one. That's what the pasuk is coming to teach, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that we're going to make him pay for the more expensive one. You're right, if he ate chusha, we know that he would not pay for a more expensive row, but we don't know which one he ate. That's what the pasuk is mandating, that he has to pay for the more expensive one. Which Amar Rava, Rava asked, wait a second. If we would know for sure that he ate from the cheaper row, Misham Khusha, of course you would agree that he pays for the cheaper value. Hash to delay Adina, now that we don't know Misham Shmeina, you pay for the most expensive row? But Amaitse Mechaveroi, Allah of Haraya. There's a biblical halacha, which as it's brought in Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Mem Bav Mabez, that learns it out from the Torah when it says in Shmais Chav Dalad, Mid Bal Dvarm Yigash Aleim. Whoever is someone that has words to say, he comes and he brings, what does it mean he brings? He brings proof, and that is the one who wants to collect from someone else, it's Allah Lahibi Rai. He has to bring witnesses and proof to verify the doubt. So how can you say that when the damager damaged a certain role, we don't know what he damaged, that you're saying that then he has to pay as if it's the most expensive field? Why? There's a biblical halacha that says when that there's a suffix, and the nizik, the damaged party in this case, wants to collect from the mazik, it's a lovely heavy rye. He has to bring proof. How can you interpret that the pasuk is telling you when you don't know that then he has to pay from the best of the nizik? But that doesn't make sense, because we know that the biblical halacha says that you don't have to give if you're being collected from. You, the other person has to bring proof. So he would only have to pay from the kusha. How can you say that even if you don't know that he has to pay from the shmeina? So Ella Amar of Achab Yaakov, rather of Achab Yaakov explains how we interpreted it according to Abaye before, as we continue Tabba and Testament Aleph, rather Hacham Mayaskina, what we're talking about over here is Kagan Shahisa Idis de Nizik is Iburis de Mazik, where the highest quality field of the Nizik was the same as the lowest quality field of the Mazik of the damager. In other words, as Rashi explains, of course, according to Bishmol, that he would agree that you're not going to evaluate the row that the animal ate only according to the value of whatever it was that it ate. If he ate an expensive row, so you have to pay according to that value. If he ate an inexpensive row, that's how much he has to pay. Now, however, but we told him already past that stage. After Bezdin assessed how much the damage was, and then the Mazik says, look, I don't have money to pay up. So he tells the Nizik, look, I want you to take from my land the amount of the damage that I had caused you. Now, when he says he wants to give him his land, he wants to give him from his lowest grade land, which is the same as the highest quality land as the Nizik. Now, but the Nizik says, no, I'm going to make you pay for the damage you did. I want your highest quality field according to how much the value of the damage was by my field. Because the Torah says, Meitav Sedeyu, Meitav Karma, you got to give the best that you have. I'm going to take everything you got, your highest quality. That's where the Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva is. Rabbi Shmuel Savar B'denizik Shemina. He holds, and when the Torah says, Meitav Sadehu, whose field are we talking about? And that is, if let's say the Mazik is coming to pay up with land, which is, if it's, let's say, less than the highest quality of the Nizik, and he wants to pay up for the how much he damaged the Nizik, that's what the Pasuk is coming to tell you, that no, the Nizik could force him to pay at least from the highest quality of that is by the Nizik at least. But better than the Nizik's best field, that Rabbi Shmuel holds, we can't force the Mazik to pay up even if he has a higher quality field. Because what the Pasuk is mandating when it says, oh, you got to pay the best of his field, it means the best of the Nizik's field. And that is, if let's say you have lower quality land even under his best, that you can't. He could force you to pay his best, but not the Mazik's best. Whereas Rebbe Kiva Savar ben Mazik Shemina, Rebbe Kiva holds that no, when the Torah is saying Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Karma, who is it talking about? The Pasuk is talking about the damager. It's talking about he sends his animal and it grazes and it damages in someone else's field. Who are we talking about? The Mazik. And the Torah is saying Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Karma Yishalom, his best, who is the subject of that Pasuk, is the Mazik. It's the best of his field. That's Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, where of course no one's paying more than how much they damaged. Question is, what quality field, whose best are we talking about? Shmuel says the Nizik's best, Akiva says the Mazik's best. And now we understand what Abai was saying, that the halacha of our mission that says that by the damaged party he collects from the Idis, that it's only a rabbinic halacha of tikkun olam, not a biblical halacha, when the pasuk says it has to be made of sedei, made of kamoi. That's because it's going like Rabbi Shmuel, who holds that midday raisa biblically, you only have to give the best, that's the nizik's field. And if the mazik's lowest grade ziburis is the same as the nizik's highest quality, he only has to give his ziburis, which is made of sedei, made of kamoi of the nizik. But, says Abaye, that's what our mission is teaching, but rabbinically, because of tikkun olam, that we really want to stop people from having their animals damage other people. They'll be really careful because you just know whatever is your highest quality field, the nizik could be able to demand rabbinically because of tikkun olam to get even the idus of the mazik. Where again, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that's not biblical. According to him, not like Rabbi Akiva, meitav sedei, meitav kamei yishalom means the idus of the nizik.